A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Can you believe it? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Too Much Movie. This is a show that very rarely dips out of a decade. We stay in one decade because that decade exemplifies the kind of motion pictures that are just too much. You're so spoiled. On the same weekend, you could go and see things like In the Line of Fire and Jurassic Park. You could go and do those things in this decade. But right now, because of the passing of the beautiful, legendary, and very close to all of our hearts, Val Kilmer, we've had an emergency convention of, firstly, the deadliest pistolier since Wild Bill, they say, Chris Candy. Chris?
This fucking movie. This fucking movie.
And my law dog. That what you are, law dog? Rob Belushi.
For me, the passing of Val Kilmer was, the strain was more than I could bear.
More than I could bear. And I'm Blake Howard, and this, we are covering Tombstone. Let's have a listen to a trailer for a movie that I want to start right off the back with a little bit of conspiracy theory that says that it's directed by one George P. Cosmatos. But it's
a lot of controversy there. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty widely known that it's directed by Kurt Russell. So here's the trailer for Tombstone, and then the boys and I are going to come back and talk about why this legendary movie is too much.
It was a place where a man could start over, where a fortune could be made. They say every town has a story. Tombstone as a legend.
Who is he?
That's Wyatt Earp. Better name for himself as a peace officer.
I heard of you.
I'm retired.
You must be Doc Holliday. You retired too?
Not me. I'm in my prime.
Hollywood Pictures presents...
The only real law around here is the cowboys.
The story of Wyatt Earp.
The first time in our lives we got a chance to stop wandering and finally be a family. Now this is trouble we don't need.
If we're gonna have a future in this town, it's gotta have some law and order.
What do you want, Ringo?
I want your blood. I want your soul. I want them both right now.
I shot your brother.
Now the time has come for justice.
Guess maybe you better swear me in.
And he has to live up to his reputation.
You got a fight coming.
I'll be there!
One last time.
None of your problem, Doc. You don't have to mix up in this.
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
In a battle.
The last charge of Wyatt Earp and his immortals.
At the OK Corral.
Oh, my God.
The West would never forget. Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Dana Delaney, Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, Bill Paxton, Jason Priestley, Sam Elliott, and Charlton Heston.
You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me!
Justice is coming to Tombstone.
Val Passing is why we're doing this. Definitely this would have been on our list. This was the first movie that I could watch. I have not been able to watch Heat yet since Val passed. That would be too much to bear for me right now. I can't even watch it now that he's gone. And so watching this, the cast is as follows. Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, Charlton Heston, Jason Priestley, Stephen Lang, Thomas Hayden Church, Dana Delaney, Paula Malcolmson, Lisa Collins, Dana Wheeler Nicholson, Joanna Pacula, Harry Carey Jr., Michael Rooker. Then it stops. That's just the top cast. There's 75 people in this.
Did you say Thomas Hayden Church?
Thomas Hayden Church.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We got to Thomas Hayden Church. Billy Bob Thornton.
Oh, God. He's
Billy Bob Thornton.
Wyatt.
Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
We've also got Billy Zane. Of course, we forgot Billy Zane. And then Frank Stallone. Frank Stallone. I think that's pretty much everyone that is... at the top, Robert Mitchum is the narrator of the movie. When did you guys first see this movie?
Rob, you start.
I saw it at the AMC on Arizona and Third Street Promenade. It was great. It's so weird. Like, I remember always liking this movie, and I've seen it a few times, and I've seen it not too long ago. And like, I even sent a text being like, you know, this movie is fine. What I really like about it are the colorful characters, but like, it's fine. It's a fine movie.
What you said was you're going to get like doped up on laudanum, like Molly is what you actually said. Let's Allie.
I watched it again and, you know, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And I was getting into my like pretentious little bitch kind of vibes about Tombstone. And like, the fact is I cried four times watching this movie yesterday. And, you know, I'm generally going through something emotionally and spiritually in my life, but also this movie is fantastic for a lot of reasons, some of them straight ahead, like Western, well done Western reasons, and some of them like very peculiar to this movie, you know, like this idea of finding your calling, not just duty, but in love. It is still fresh. Like, you don't see that a lot of like, doing something wrong that is right. You know, Dana Delaney's speech. I mean, shout out to Wesleyan alum, Dana Delaney, my goddess, my personal China beach. But I want to step back also, because when we were talking about doing this one in honor of Val Kilmer, it felt a little on the nose, you know, like I wanted to be like, let's do Salt and Sea. Let's do Wonderland. Like, let's do one that not everyone's going to do, like The Doors or Willow even, you know. And then I watched it. Kurt Russell is great in this movie.
Oh, my God.
And nobody fucking comes close to Val Kilmer. He is every line so full and interesting and off-putting and so funny. And I'm so glad we picked this, because I think something that is it's talked about, but still somehow underrated, is how fucking funny that guy was on screen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Effortlessly. It was like, it was charm, but not just charm. It was downright laughs. I mean, of course,
real genius, top secret, all of that. But like, he gets the joke.
Yeah.
He gets the fucking joke of life, and he brings it, that his heart, he's such a fucking artist, man. He is maybe my favorite actor. Growing up, when we grew up, I saw Walter Shaw say, you know, read an article that Val Kilmer was Gen X's Brando. And he's so, I mean, Walter's so smart, but it.
Walter hurts my brain about how smart he is sometimes. He's so amazing. I'm in awe of him.
And it was like the headline itself was like, absolutely framed what he was to me. He all these performances.
And later in another potential too much movie candidate, The Isle of Dr. Moreau, Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
He then starts playing Brando in the movie. He just starts he starts cosplaying and acting as Brando before meeting his demise.
I think he always had even his documentary book when he was annoying everyone on the set of Island of Dr. Moreau, this camera, you know, like I think he has this aura of like difficulty or being annoying on set, but like it's so clear in his work and even from that documentary that he was just on his journey having fun, man, and fully racing a thoroughbred's race through life. And it is so terrible that disease found that beautiful man and that beautiful body and took him away from us. These two guys, listeners, like immediate text, you know, just like, it was like when we lost Ray Liotta, it was like a seminal piece of my childhood and what I thought about movies. It had me very grief stricken. I'll shut up now, but Doc Holliday is one of the best performances of that decade. One of the best performances of his career. It's a mythic performance that he translates so specifically and so weirdly and eccentrically. And that's what I love about Val Kilmer. He was so beautiful and so charming and handsome. And he never stopped jamming the dick of weird into your mouth while you watched it. And, you know, allowed himself to fuck with your preconception of what a movie star is, you know. He was a star. He lit up the screen. You could not take your eyes off him.
Chris.
Yeah. This movie, I can't remember the first time I saw this movie, but it was in an era of heavy movie consumption for me. This was when this movie came out in 95, 96?
No, it's later. 93. It's so, yeah.
Yeah, okay, no, so. No,
right in that pocket, yeah.
I remember this movie came out around the same time as Wyatt Earp.
They were racing to beat each other.
Yeah, and I was
Dennis Quaid, aka poor man's Harrison Ford, just became poor man's Val Kilmer overnight.
Yeah, exactly. I remember being really interested in watching the two movies and comparing them, and like the kind of long-winded elements of a Kevin Costner Wyatt Earp, because that was Kevin Costner as Wyatt Earp, correct?
Yeah, sure was.
And I remember really enjoying it, and I remember this experience of like, and this will all make sense. I tend to like movies sometimes that are long-winded, and you can get lost in the worlds they create. And Wyatt Earp did a great job of that. And I always remember trying to be on Team Wyatt Earp. And then I saw Tombstone, and it was so undeniably fucking good that there was no competition.
Yeah.
There was just no competition. It was kind of like, this is a car, and this is a fucking Ferrari, you know, this is a race car. There was just no comparison. And again, watching this movie, I agree to everything that Rob said about Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer, I think, was just one of the great actors of our time on Earth. And And I often think of a quote people were saying about losing David Bowie. We're so lucky that we got to be on planet Earth at the same time as
Oh, yeah.
Val Kilmer. Just a complete force when it came to performance. And what I love about this movie is it falls into the category of Predator, LA Confidential, Heat. It just like hits all these notes where it's like you rally behind it. With that being said, it is a total dude film. And I couldn't help but
Oh,
think of
yeah.
my time I go up to like Redding, California to visit my girlfriend's family. And I just see that kind of attitude throughout so many men who just have like the, yeah, well, I always knew what was better, but I guess it's time for me to take the law into my own hand. You know, I tried to stay out. So the theming of it made me laugh. But my first thought when I started watching this movie is, and I often say this on the show, we're not making movies like this anymore.
No.
This is the kiss goodnight to Western. It is such a perfect film. It is such a perfect Western. It basically is a stagecoach exterior, and it's got a, you know, V8 engine underneath it. It works really fucking well.
It's a beautiful
Loved it.
movie. It's a beautiful movie. I can't remember if I saw this one. I think I've talked about it with you guys on the show before. My brother works for a film distributor, like their home entertainment. He would bring home Time Code VHSs, which they used to send to video stores before videos would rent them. They're like the old school screeners. And so basically from like 1992 when he started to like 2001, he would bring them home while VHS still existed. And so I'm pretty sure I watched this on VHS, and I watched it until the reels inside broke. Like I couldn't get enough of this. Like it had everyone in it. It was a movie because I was less familiar with Carpenter and stuff. Like my brother or my dad weren't like Carpenter heads. I found Carpenter and Kurt later. So I think that this was one of my like Titanic like Kurts. And I obviously had probably been exposed to Val previously around or around this time to like Batman Forever. Like this is all in the like, I hadn't seen the Doors yet, and it was like Batman Forever and Heat and Tombstone. They're all in this like nice little corridor. And I just remember thinking that Kurt Russell was so badass, and Wyatt Earp's like the Kevin Costner one is much more contemplative and long, and you need to be, I think, in a more adult mindset. It's like a music video, like dun dun, the score just starts, and there's just
Drives it, yeah.
all these guys, Powers Booth and Michael Biehn and all those crazy, like all the cowboys, and they're all just so brutal and gross people, and you're like, man, this movie could not rule any harder. And then since then, this was the only movie, speaking of Val, I had like an experience. I was away on holiday with my family, and occasionally, gets to the end of the day, we'd just sit down and watch a movie. I took my laptop, and like this was the first movie that I could bear watching. And then I was like, okay, what's the next one? And I went, all right, I'll watch Top Gun Maverick. So I had a few tears in this watching it with him, and then I saw him in
Me too.
Top Gun, and then I had him in Top Gun Maverick. And the kid, it was the first time my kids had both seen me cry watching a movie like Ball. They're like, "Daddy, you okay?" I'm like, "Okay, I'm okay. Just gets me." I was just not in a good place. And then I watched The Island of Dr. Moreau, which cheered me up immensely. I watched that by myself. I watched that by myself, but I watched the documentary. So I've been watching him, but as I said, Val Kilmer means to me, Val Kilmer is the rule that I say, which is if you're a good actor, or you want to ever show how good an actor you are, you have to stand toe to toe with the best actors of your generation, and not only meet but sometimes exceed them. And a lot of people talk about the heat of it all with Pacino and De Niro, but I think if you look at Heat 2, the novel, particularly, the movie is a triptych. It's three. There are three main characters in that movie. There's Chris and
Sure.
Charlie Hunnam's story is so vital to that story. It is a human drama with all these other elements, but that one gets the most screen time and most attention because of them having to try and cut into this cruise through Charlene. And I have only ever watched that movie when Val Kilmer was alive. And I've watched it 300, I don't know how many times I've watched it. You guys maybe could guess, I don't know. But I couldn't bear watching it right now. That one still is a little bit too close. It's I just probably need a breath or a time when my children go watch me and pull my eyes out when I watch it.
It's just last week that I posted that, you know, the sun rise and sets like out of nowhere, because he's so interesting. I talked about how weird he is, but like, he's such a light, focused, perfect second banana to De Niro, in that he knows his role in the movie and he knows his role in the crew, and he just is, man. And in this, he's the heart of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And you watch Kurt Russell, who from whatever I've heard, had taken a real leadership role on set. Obviously he's number one on the call sheet and a big star, but also forming this movie. But you also see him welcome in script, but also on stage, welcoming Val's energy in and never getting,
he loves it.
I thought a lot about Kurt and Val in this movie, and I kept on thinking back to Kurt Russell's like scope in acting and how he started as a Disney star as a kid. And I just really felt that in rewatching this, like his chops as a child actor really got him to be where he is today, because this movie's got so much play in it. You know, it's like really is the like definition of being a kid and playing, cowboy as a kid. And there's a lot of that activity in this movie. And I could only imagine that it brings up those feelings when you're making it. And like, I just really felt like...
Well, he named his son Wyatt. I mean...
Yeah. It kind of felt like a full scope of his career watching this to that point. Obviously he's since gone on to do so much other stuff, but he was kind of bringing his pedigree to this. And then I really feel like Val was just in this pure flex mode that he'd been in for a long time and still continued to do afterwards. But you're totally right. It's too cruel to call him a scene stealer, because it's not what he was doing. It was literally that Brando element of just like, yeah, I'm bringing kind of art to this project,
and
whether you like it or not.
Kurt Russell's like, Val's the Omega energy. Kurt Russell in this movie, like we've all been around someone who's a real tough person, not someone who acts tough, but is a real tough guy. And in a movie of a whole bunch of guys cosplaying as tough guys, when Kurt Russell walks onto screen and he's like barely carrying a gun, he's like pistol whips people and smokes in their face and like slapping around Billy Bob Thornton. I'm like, oh no, this guy's actually tough. He could beat the shit out of a lot of these guys that's on set. Like he's standing next to Sam Elliott, and Sam Elliott, like, they're just like cool. Like Sam Elliott's a tough motherfucker. Powers Booth, Michael Biehn, like, he is peak Matt Machismo in the coolest possible way. And so Val is the necessary deflator to get the movie back to earth when it wants to go into these states of the unreal. Like one of my favorite lines ever, where it's like, where's Wyatt? He's like, he's down by the river walking on water. It's just the coolest fucking line. It's just so good. Just everything about this movie I adore. And it's just good. Like the controversy behind the direction, it's kind of speculative because I think people have like sort of shaken it off. But like there was a couple of years ago, I remember there was this thing of like, hey, everyone knows that Kurt Russell directed Tombstone, right? And I remember at the time being like, what? And like, yeah, like Cosmatos sort of lost control of the set with all these egos and actors. And eventually Kurt kind of took a role because no one would talk shit or push Kurt around. And so he just wrangled everyone and was like, this is what we're doing. And I think that is a testament to his aura in the movie. It's a testament to his status in the industry. It's a testament to his experience and the respect that everyone has for him, because like a newish director directing this cast to do this story, if he started,
it had a lot of scope too, man. I mean, the town, the fires, the horses, the gun battles, the locations. I was, you know, all those shots. I mean, the one shot of Val, like there are a couple moments where it goes over the skis a little bit, like when they're riding the horses and they shake hands. I'm like, God, it's a lot. You're not gonna fucking shake hands while riding on.
Slow-mo, no. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a big movie, and it dances, you know, it is an entertainment. They bring in those actors into the movie, and it's a statement to the fact that like this movie is tropes and entertainment and hyperbole. And but at the same time, you know, there are a lot of mostly within the relationship between Earp and Holiday, a nuanced love story, you know, and there's the Dana Delaney, but like to Chris's point, it is like a very 90s male dichotomy of women where it's like, oh, I've got this bitch wife who's fucking whacked out on laudanum. And I'm like, I want to stay true to her. But then there's this rich actress.
Who's so hot.
Who's telling me that, what was the line? What if we just traveled the world and lived off rooms?
Yeah. Like.
Hell yeah.
And we're all like, dump the wife, dump the wife.
She's a drug addict. Opium addiction. Her, you know?
There's probably a lot that Kurt's doing to like activate that, but it is heartbreaking when, you know, she comes after that gun battle and she sees Wyatt looking at Dana Delaney and she walks away. It just kind of breaks your heart. Val Kilmer is, Kurt Russell is fully fleshed out and realized, but Doc Holliday is the personality.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
If we're to follow the natural arc of this movie, though, I was watching it this time going, oh, this movie is about friendship.
Yes.
This movie is about, you know, this movie is about camaraderie, friendship, all the other stuff.
That's the best. I mean, the best couplet of the whole movie is that. Yeah. Well, hell, Doc, I got a lot of friends. I don't.
Yeah, that was the scene that really actually got me emotional going like, I wonder, because it just felt like he brought a lot, and I'm just, my suspicion is a character and an ego like Val Kilmer's, who's that out there, who knows how many friends he had. I'm sure he did, but it's like, it just felt like there was some truth to that. And that's also a very human feeling, you know, am I alone? The loneliness of it all.
There's a really,
I mean, I think of myself as the Val Kilmer in a friendship. Like,
sure,
Chris Candy is my friend, you know?
Yeah.
I got a lot of friends. I don't. And I was thinking this last night, like, I'm very loyal. Friendship is important to me. I have high expectations. I'm fucking there. But in reality, I'm probably more the Ike Clanton of the whole situation. Like a loudmouth fucking coward. You know? And this movie has such great villains and such great cowards in Ike Clanton and Billy Bob Thornton. Is that Stephen Lang?
It is Stephen Lang. Legend Stephen Lang.
He's so great. Such great heroes. And so, like, Powers Booth is so it's such a
delicious
great,
he's delicious.
Like, Powers Booth is the Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo is the Wyatt Earp, and they kind of are, you know, against
evil King Wyatt Earp,
on
Doc
the board
Holliday.
Of each other. It's really fun and they're fantastic. Johnny Ringo, where are you going with that shotgun? I interrupted you, Blake. Go ahead.
No. That one is what's his name? Where is Billy Bob's character? I just had it. Billy Bob.
It's
guess Johnny Tyler. Where you going with that shot? Where you going with that shotgun?
Oh, that's it. Johnny Tyler. Yeah.
Johnny Tyler. Yeah.
Doc, you're back in town?
When he says thank you at the end, it's like
You leave that. Good. You leave that shotgun.
All we gotta do is keep our eyes on that brass ring, fellas.
You're the one, Wyatt.
Wyatt, Johnny Tyler, the madcap.
Doc,
where you going with that shotgun?
I didn't know you was back in town.
Well, well. How the hell are you,
Wyatt? I am rolling. Morgan.
Doc.
Virgil.
Who, Doc?
Wyatt Earp.
Going into business for ourselves, Doc. Wyatt just got us a Faro game.
No. Since when is Faro a business?
Didn't you always say that gambling's an honest trade?
No, I said poker's an honest trade. Only suckers buck the tiger. The odds are all on the house.
Depends on how you look at it. I mean, it's not like anybody's putting a gun to their head now, is it?
That's what I love about Wyatt. He can talk himself into anything. Oh, Johnny, I apologize. I forgot you were there. You may go now.
Just leave that shotgun. Leave it. Thank you. Sheriff Behan.
Gentlemen.
Sheriff. Have you met Doc Holliday?
Kiss on you, Wyatt.
Mr. Holliday.
Thank you.
The movie's I was thinking of it from a sequencing standpoint, and this movie has a lot of sequences that were edited together. You know, I'm not sure if it was completely from page to shot to edit, you know, I'm not quite sure, but it does a nice thing of the score really helps with this too, but it does have a nice fun edit and a flow to it. You know, it kind of like one of the best, like I think about like, when you have Wyatt's demise and everyone's getting taken out and his brother loses his arm and his other brother's shot, it's like that the prequel to that is like, yes, obviously foreshadowed with the lightning and all of this stuff. But I just love the scene of him and Paxton in the bar with the dog, and he's drinking the beer and he tells his other brother, "Oh, it's getting cold outside. Better bundle up." It's like, so like, what am I watching? You know, it's such like a nothing scene. And I really appreciated that because I often find that.
I often find you need the scene
to help with storytelling. These nothing scenes actually mean quite a bit, you know, and they serve a purpose because it is about to launch us into a whole story point. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Well, this movie has a lot of plot and, you know, I think to the detriment of some of its characters, like everyone gets their little moment, but like the Sam Elliott and the Bill Paxton of it all are, you know, they're great. And, you know, you barely remember them. And
it's because
Jason Priestley just shows up. Like, it's like, we're like 30 minutes into the movie and then all of a sudden it's just like, background Jason Priestley, what? You know,
I remembered him as like a biographer, and then I realized that that's Saul Rubinek.
That's Saul Rubinek. You've just gone Unforgiven. Yeah. You've taken together.
I was like, what the
different
fuck?
Different movie.
Jason Prinsley's a little cute guy who's like got a crush on Billy Zane's Mr. Fabian. It's adorable.
I love that he wanted to bring something beautiful to you and you killed him for it. Like there's such great lines that when he goes to her at the end and I have nothing, I have no pride, I don't know how I'll make money, but I promise to love you for the rest of my life. It's such a fucking it made me cry, yeah. Honestly. And yeah. I will do what a movie tells me to do. I'm not adverse to, I'm not like, that's not, you know, I mean, the handshake was a little much on the horse, but like, I'm going to do what a movie wants me to do. It wanted me to cry. I cried. And then doing this one now with that scene between Doc and Wyatt when Doc is dying. And Wyatt is visiting him every day. It made me die. I mean, it made me cry my eyes out. He begs him to leave, to give him the only defeat Doc Holliday will ever have, to let him be defeated alone, to do him that honor. And his death scene is so like, he sees his feet, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just like, this is funny. That's funny. And he goes... And it's all just so beautiful. I mean, that line of like, there's no normal life, Wyatt, just life. Go on and live it. Like you've been living for law. You've been living for your wedding. You've been living for this idea of family, like all these constraints.
I was in love once. My first cousin, she was 15. We were both so.
That's good, Doc. That's good. What happened?
She joined a convent over the affair. She was all I ever wanted. What did you want?
Just to live a normal life.
There's no normal life, Wyatt. There's just life. Get on with it.
Don't know how.
Sure you do. Say goodbye to me. Go grab that spirited actress and make her your own. Take that beauty and run. Don't look back. Live every second. Live right up the hill. Live wild. Live for me. Why, if you ever my friend, if you ever had even the slightest feeling for me, leave now. Leave now. Please.
Thanks for always being there, Doc.
Fuck it, man. Like, enter the life that I were out of restraint. I do what I want to do in death's eye. I gamble, I hang out, I find love in, you know, dark and dingy places with, that woman is not Hungarian. Like, I don't know. But you know.
Hello, my loving man.
She's fantastic. And like, go and define your own life is what he says. I got to define mine. Now let me take this one defeat on my own. I cried my eyes out. I mean, I fucking cried my eyes out. All the plot, all the manipulations, the scoring, the, you know, like them walking towards that where the cowboys are waiting for them to disarm them. Suddenly there's just a huge house on fire behind them.
Fire behind them, roaring. It's like it's roaring as they're walking to the OK Corral. It's unbelievable.
It's fucking great. And I'm like, who set that fire? Nobody set that fire. It's just on fire Perfect choice. Perfect choice.
I'd watched something. I was trying to find it just now. Is in 2024, Kurt Russell, and I watched the clip again because it got recirculated when Val passed, was like at the end of the movie, they had such a great relationship that they gave each other a gift at the end of the movie. And he's like, and our relationship was ultimately about death. And he said, so because they were in Tombstone, I bought Val a grave plot at Boot Hill Graveyard.
Wow.
And gave it to him. And then Val laughed and got his gift for me. And he bought me an acre of land overlooking Boot Hill Graveyard. And they didn't know.
That's funny.
They didn't know that they did that. And he's like, I love that, man. Like that their connection is so beautiful. And yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. He's the low key hero of the movie, even though he's a drunk and a lunger and
he is, though. I think, yeah, that's, sorry, keep going, but
no, I was just that every moment it's like, don't any of you want to play for blood? I'm your Huckleberry. Like, and then
come
like
off. Come on, I love it. Come on.
When, yeah, that was,
shoots him awesome. Right in the skull. Shoots him right in the skull, puts his gun away, and then does the dance. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. And also, we were just talking about the slow moments in this movie. All that slowness and those character beats, it literally just pays off to just be this absolute orgasmic orchestra of death montage, of like them just gunning people down. Like it leads up to that moment, and then it has to have a breath, and then it gets back to fully sick killing cowboys montages on every which way you can. And yeah, that it's a special one.
They stole a lot. I mean, as all post, you know, 60s Westerns did, but like you could see them really in the film stock and the horse movements and the frames. Like there's a lot of the Wild Bunch in there, you know?
Oh yeah.
Blood, the color of the blood.
Yeah.
It felt like, and they were like match Peckinpah's red, you know what I mean? And do you think I'm right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. They know what world they're operating in.
Yeah. Yeah. And they weren't
and
shy
these
aren't about
easy.
You know?
Yeah.
It was great. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
No, these aren't easy movies to make either. You know, you got to think, it's like, one sec. Sorry. These aren't easy movies to make. Like when you look at a Western film, the wardrobe they're in, the environment, where did they shoot this movie? Do we know?
I think they shot it. I think they actually, I'm going to just find out. So they, give me one sec. I saw,
but you know, it's like, these are, it's not like you just go in your backyard and find some of these amazing vistas or these towns or whatnot, unless they filmed on a lot nearby and stuff. But it's like, it's a big orchestration to get some of these things together. Horses, you know, there's a lot of elements going on here. As I was watching it, I kind of have a new scope on those kinds of movies. But yeah, it's, you know, it's truly Val's movie. And
it was in Arizona. The movie was shot, primarily filmed on location in Arizona at Old Tucson, the Mezcal movie set, and some other locations. And the reason that I remembered that there was a quote about it is because Val Kilmer had this funny line where he said, like, Kevin Jarre, who's the screenwriter, insisted the actors wear like the real woolen costumes that everyone wore. So like the wardrobe was really important. And he goes, in the Birdcage theater scene, Kilmer said there was a thermometer on set that read 134 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 56 degrees Celsius for you Australians. And Kilmer joked at the time, he's like, the reason that Doc Holliday killed so many people is because he wore wool in the summer. He just got so
right. Angry. That's what I'm getting
it's
at. Like,
fucking hot in Arizona. Shout out to Jen, our dear friend Jen Johans, who's in Arizona in the fucking sweltering heat in summer. Holy.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
I think in rewatching this, it just like I said, it's a complete movie in the sense of like it just works so damn well. And yeah, within regards to the slow-mos, they do play well. But yeah, that's where it got a little over the skis for me a little bit, where I was like, I remember I was watching it going like, I think he says like no a bunch of times here. And then I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, it's he's just up. Saying yeah. No and firing a shotgun.
No, that's
like, okay.
In the creek bed.
When he walks in and they're surrounded and he just doesn't want, he just walks into the middle of the creek and starts firing on people. Like, it's epic.
It's insane. There's no, and to that point too, it's like, I don't have an answer for what would be better. It's like, that was fucking awesome. Like, you know, it's like, even if it goes to those elements of like being like kind of wild, I'm still like, this is pretty dope still. I like the other one that was kind of funny, a little, maybe too much of the too much movie pod was the, when his brother does die and he's like, it's a beautiful shot. They follow him out of the Oriental saloon and it's raining and he's got the blood on him and the actress comes up and he's like, stay away from me. Stay away from me. Can't you see? And he's just like, oh God. It's like,
The best is when he like later apologizes for it and she was like, I forgave you the moment you said it. And he's like, thank you.
Yeah, there was like, a lot of that.
It's so funny. It's big and hell's coming with me. You know, that
love it though.
I'm coming. But you know, they set that up with that priest's curse of on a pale horse, death will come and bring hell.
No,
you know, like,
no, that's great. That I want to say that line pays for itself because it's like, doesn't say anything about a sick horse, you ignorant rich.
Yeah.
And then he does the quote.
Yeah.
Talks about a man on a pale horse.
That's
death will come with him.
It's like he is blessed by something like the spirit of revenge or whatever that gets him over the creek and that's what I love. I mean, that's what I love about Westerns is myth building, you
yes.
know, the American gunslinger and the lonely lawman and, you know, the family, you know, it's like Rio Bravo, the family that they are forced to make is often not a regular life. It's their dudes. But Val Kilmer's introduction in the movie is so fucking great at that poker game when he's just ribbing that guy about beating him at poker over and over. And he's like, if we're not friends, I don't know if I can bear it. You know, over and over, just fucking won't lay off. And it's like the most I've ever related to Doc Holliday.
I was going to say, that's a very Rob Belushi move. When your parlays are up and your friends are down, you are just insufferable, I bet.
Hitting it over and over and over. Oh, man. I love Val Kilmer because he could do anything. He would go anywhere and he absolutely would nail it. You know, first position, second position, like we talked about in the movie, you know, Jim Morrison. I love the Salt and Sea for what he keeps inside in that movie and what he does. And I always watch that in tandem with Wonderland. He's a bit like, he plays John Holmes, a fucking coke addicted liar. And it's so, I mean, I guess there's lots of types of coke addicts, but he's dead on the money. I mean, I feel like every time I watch that movie, I'm relapsing. And I am, you know, a very obvious and also self-proclaimed dolphin in the ocean of cocaine. But he is so dark and so degraded in that movie. Yeah. And then you see him in Tombstone or even Heat, where he's just so exceptionally effective, or Top Gun, or any other thing. But like, he was unwilling to shy away from ugliness with that beautiful face, you know? And I just fucking loved him for it. I love that he took risks and made himself look unlikable, but it was always like any good actor, you know, it was always so fucking honest. You just believed he was the guy. Never did you think like he was. Oh, that's Jim Morrison. That is Jim. You know what I mean? So it's like, and then let's talk about Spartan for 1 second. Spartan is so fucking good. And he is in the rigors of a David Mamet clamped fist. And he is, again, a thoroughbred playing the next right action throughout the whole movie. Moment to moment, he has this movie hinges on him actually having to make a choice, an ethical choice, right? But he's so fucking cool, man. And so alive doing nothing, you know? It's the same type of vibe he has in Heat, and it's just I love that movie so much, and I can never put my finger on why. Maybe you can help, Blake, you know, like I love him in it. I love him in it. Even
what
though
character does he play? He plays Rio or
in Spartan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was following the wrong lead there.
I'm everywhere, dude. I'm spinning on Val Kilmer and like
it's
I don't know.
It's
you follow up, Blake.
He doesn't even have a defined name in Spartan. He's called like four different things, like Bobby, Mr. Scott, everyone knows him under a different alias. He's just like, I didn't see man. Okay. And
it's there's a quote actually from Val Kilmer. He did a commentary for Spartan.
It's the best.
And Kilmer says these are some of his choice quotes. He's like, this is Kilmer of Mamet. He's cruel. He hates actors, having failed at the profession himself. There are a lot of tears on set. It was tough because you'd be playing a tough guy and he'd break you down. But in front of everyone too, he wouldn't do it in the trailer. I hate him. And then there's other one who's like, we had a thing called the Spartan Times, which was a newsletter produced every week by David's assistant, basically to make David look good in front of the crew. So she would follow him around and write down any humorous thing he said and make up stuff that she would attribute to David. It's so good. And there's just him like taking the mickey out of him on that set. He said like teases him about wearing a beret. It's fantastic. But I think that
like having people stand around laughing at not categorically not funny.
No. You know? Because he was insecure about Val making everyone laugh. I think Val is for me. Everyone talks about Brando as a leading man, and he does have those leading man performances. But ultimately, his most iconic performance is Don Corleone in The Godfather. And that's not the main character of the movie. It's just not. You know, King Lear is not, he is in some parts, but he's not really the main character of King Lear. It's the daughters. It's the three daughters. And I think that Kilmer was like, it needs a new name of like character actor, supporting actor, whatever. But Kilmer just could completely rebalance an entire movie. And I think that's why Tombstone is so exceptionally special, is because there's so much hanging on Kurt Russell to lead, to have this aura, to be the guy that walks on water and you believe it, to pistol whip people, to do all this
stuff. Push the story forward.
He's got all the legwork, and where Kilmer can create this absolutely complete balance or tonal imbalance from that, but that it actually writes the ship for the whole movie, is that he gets to just be this different alchemical thing. It's like the different energy and
a dutyless extravagance.
Yes, exactly right. And so and then when in Heat, which is such a grounded and real movie, he is just like, De Niro on the one side is like, have no attachments to anything, blah, blah, blah. What's Kilmer's line? Well, for me, the sun rises and sets with it, man.
Dispels the myth of the man alone, which is later.
Yes.
Is his
future.
Lie to himself.
Yes.
Is what kills him. You
yes.
know?
And so there's something that he can do, and it's like Iceman. It's like Ice in Maverick. It's like he's not the engine. He's like he's the perfect volley. He's the exact shot that you need to keep the ball moving. When someone does this killer thing, it looks like they're just going to run away with it. He just has an answer. He's like fucking watching Agassi play tennis, where someone would like do this unbelievable serve and Agassi would just be like, here, there it is. He just hit it back to them. And they're like, how the fuck did he even know where that was going? He's just like, he just gets it. He just does something. He's just got some skill, this perfect, like it's a top spin coming and he cuts it, or it's a thing that's cutting and he top spins it. Like he just had instinct and panache. And in this movie, he knows exactly what it needs. He knows that while Wyatt's there being gruff and getting in someone's face, he's there going, Frederick fucking Chopin. Like, you know, like it's just, he's unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
You know what? He's unbelievable. And like, even in real genius.
Yeah.
That anyone else playing that part turns that movie is already a fucking, you know, 95 minute sketch.
Yes.
But anyone else playing that part, it's like he rides this line of charm and arrogance, but just on the side of likability, humor, but there's it's covering the danger of what he's enmeshed in. And he's so fucking funny and fun in it. But
I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang
Bang. Never
bang.
Lose the heart of what happened to him, you know?
He is a well-defined person that we trust. When he shows up on screen, we know that this guy is a magician.
It's the
and
truth.
We know we are going to see something interesting. And if it's Batman, if it's Tombstone, if it's The Doors, whatever it is, you can if it's MacGruber, you can sit and watch Val Kilmer do the show, and you trust him every time. And you cannot say that about a lot of actors in his position, because sure. And I dare to say you cannot even say that about Brando, because
Brando stopped caring about the discipline of learning the script and being so good to have the spontaneity. Whereas he was all spontaneity and none of the discipline. Whereas like Kilmer, If you're in a David Mamet movie,
Kilmer didn't
lead,
have a fucking voice, and he was in Maverick. Yeah. He just was like, "Fuck it." It's like, come on, man. Brando, I love and hate him, but it's like, dude, you know, he has an arc. This guy was through and through an actor, and I believe it. He dedicated his life to the art, and you can't say that for 95% of the people who are working.
He's great in The Snowman, and he doesn't talk. You know? He's fucking, remember that fucking weird fucking movie?
Mr. Police.
I never saw it.
Mr. Police. We all watched it after we watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, hoping that it would be Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, but it was not. So you're forgiven, Chris, for not having seen it. But no, even like, I watched Kiss Kiss Bang Bang too. That was the other movie I watched before Maverick.
Yeah.
Sorry. He's like, but again, Downey is the plot engine, and all the stuff that's happening around Harry is the engine. And Gay Perry comes in and just like completely rebalances and tonally gives the movie what it needs. The more seriousness, the craziness, the silliness, the whatever. He's the whole anchor of the movie. When everything's going off the rails, it's just like Shane Black just knows, okay, now I deploy Gay Perry, I deploy Kilmer, and he just fucking crushes and just brings the movie back to where it needs to be exactly, recalibrates it, and we just keep it moving. And then the next Gay Perry scene is always something sensational. Like it's just every time he's in the movie, he's just crushing it. Look up idiot in the dictionary. What do you find? A picture of me? No, the definition of the word idiot, which you clearly fucking are. Like he's the best. and you know, we're even doing a, you know, while people are listening to this, in May we're starting a little One Heat Minute Film Club where we're going to have a recommendation every week for you guys to help navigate stuff watch. And the first, we've called the movie club The Juice, and in that scene,
I'm joining.
The action is the juice. In that scene, everyone talks about Sizemore, who is shaking in his boots and trying to be compliant to Neil and be a great servant because they serve each other and they love each other. Not nearly enough people, except for a little podcast called One Heat Minute, I would argue. Talk about...
I need it, brother. The bank is worth the risk.
Talk about that. It's Kilmer not only meeting but hitting De Niro between the fucking eyes that decide that they're going to do this cowboy score. I need it, brother. And then I'm out. And he is match for match, scene for scene. And he's not doing a De Niro. He's not doing business. His level of intensity is like a fucking volcano. He is just on fire. Yeah. And then he goes, and then I'm out. And then he relaxes. And it's his tenseness and his softness. It's his intensity in his gaze. And when he's looking at Michael and Michael's like wilting, like Tom Sizemore, toughest motherfucker, like flicking his tongue, nervous. He doesn't know what to say. He's looking over to Chris, Val's character, for some kind of answer. And all he sees is, I need it, brother. And then he has to do the blustery bullshit. Well, for me, the action is the juice. You know, that line is just bluster and bullshit. And it's a way to end it. But the actual scene, the heart of the scene, is Chris talking.
I've never looked at it that way. I've never looked at Sizemore being afraid in that moment. And
he's scared.
So
he's terrified.
That's so interesting.
Because he's terrified because he knows he doesn't have to do it. And so he has to then have a philosophy. Well, for me, the action is the juice. It's not about the code. It's not about the money. For me, the action is the juice. He's a cowboy. And Val is
we're almost there. Remember when he's drilling in the fucking...
Yeah. Val is the man.
I have to just give one real shout out while we're talking about Tombstone. That was a moment that really stood out. And just a quick nod to Bill Paxton, who...
Oh.
Just again dominates the court in this movie in his own Bill Paxton way. And when he's eating the apple and then he throws it over the train and is like, yeah, it's like, yep, movie started, let's go. And yeah, I just had to get that in.
He's another one that we lost. We lost Jason Priestley, we lost Bill, we lost Powers Booth. And you know, for Deadwood, I think, is my favorite show ever. it has Paula Malcolmson. You forget that Paula Malcolmson, the great Trixie, is in this. Powers Booth wanders out of Tombstone and waltzes straight.
Wait, is Jason Priestley's in this movie, or is it
Jason Priestley's in this movie? Oh, I'm sorry. We haven't lost Jason. Sorry, no. We've lost Luke Perry.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, Luke. Yeah,
Did Jason still
in?
Sorry,
I thought Jason. Now we have to kill Jason Priestley.
Oh well.
Jason is a good Canadian.
Sorry.
I was on a
show
with Jason Priestley. Very nice guy.
Sorry, Chris. We have to kill him, dude.
No, dude. He was awesome, and
you tell him I'm coming, Chris.
And
Hell's coming with me. You hear? But
Powers,
yeah, like
Powers Booth when he's comes out of that opium den and like puts his hands up to the sky and then follows like the trail of his fingers, and before he starts that shot of him, you
and
know,
House
the
of the Moon
comes down.
Oh my god,
he's so good. And I was just thinking, like, when I was watching that, I'm like, I can't believe that guy, you know, then Sin City, when he's the shitty, you know, the Nick Stahl's dad or whatever. And like,
yeah,
movies are fucking, you know, it's just the best. I love
they're the shit,
I love
man.
Actors.
They're like, watching this movie was like, it's sad to say, but it was like listening to a great vinyl record. I just was like, God, all the components are here. It fucking rocks. You know, even the logo of the Hollywood Pictures at the very beginning of the movie, I'm like, they just don't make fucking movies like this right now.
Yeah, it's...
That's what it is about Spartan, is you see him, like, operating in a world that is so... you see Mammoth trying to... It's so measured and so controlled and so bare and, like, so framed and... You cannot snuff out Val Kilmer.
No.
You just drink him in and you follow him anywhere, and the movie works because of him, and I love it.
Yeah, this is a beautiful tribute, gents. Thanks for talking to me, and thanks for our listeners listening to us gush about Val. He's just one of the absolute greats. Rest in peace.
Yeah,
and rest in peace to one of the great artists of our time who made the work look not just meaningful and deep and honest and profound, but so fucking fun and funny.
Yes,
and not every actor brings that. So fun.
No, he's in a caliber all his own, you know, and his passing has really brought out some of the most beautiful tributes. And even though he was famed to be a little bit of a chaos agent, and he even owned that in his wonderful documentary about his life, which is narrated by his son, everyone remembered him fondly. And honestly, when you think about a farewell to movies, his scene in Top Gun Maverick is
unparalleled.
That is the movie of the century for me right now. Honestly, it's the movie of the century. It's just like, it's the movie of the decade. Nope. It's the movie of the decades. It's going to be so hard to quantify the impact of that movie. And I love it for all the things that it is, but for that scene alone, I think it is utterly transcendent and special. And going back and watching him at his peak and at his end, he still had it. He still had everything. All of it was there. Even if not even the fucking cancer could squash who Val Kilmer is in that scene. So this has been too much movie. Hopefully you guys haven't been too sad. As you've been listening to this, and if you needed a good cry and needed to hear three men gush about Val Kilmer, one of them in front of a Carl's Jr., the show could be sponsored by Carl's Jr. Please, if you want to reach out, there are Carl's Jr.'s in Australia. I'm happy to do a couple of ad reads. Even as Val Kilmer, we can do some quotes, you know, like I'm happy to do that. So much love to my co-host Rob Belushi, Chris Candy. It's great to see you boys. This has been a blast.
Val Kilmer,
thank you guys.
You're the only human being in my entire life that gave me hope.
A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.